Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yesterday on the show, we were talking about biofuel and a new study which found that if we grew canola locally, we could actually have an alternative for diesel, which could be very useful if something goes deeply wrong very fast and we're unable to import diesel. And biofuels are pitched as an environmentally friendly option as countries explore ways of decarbonising their economies. We got a lot of feedback from that interview. And one of the people we heard from is Dr. Mike Joy, who shared another perspective. Mike is a lecturer at the School of Geography, Environment and Earth Sciences, Te Heringa Waka, Victoria University of Wellington, and says the mantra of green growth risks trapping us in a spiral of failures. We've invited him on the show to find out more. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Jesse.
I sort of joked yesterday that you sent me a text and I found it a bit hard to follow, but I gather that you were against the idea of biofuels. So,
I just wonder, it's like with a whole lot of these kind of magic solutions that are floating around, and I know that we're all desperate to have, you know, kind of a magic answer, but there's some devil in the details that's not mentioned. So for the biofuels, yeah, sure, we can make biofuels out of plants, but there's this, you know, critical thing to understand, and that is the energy return on energy invested. And it goes, you know, right across the whole of, well, I mean, for our food systems, you know, for us, for every bit of life on the planet, you have to get more energy back than you put into it. Otherwise, you won't survive. And that's where the kind of idea came from. But
yeah, thank
in
you.
In this case, yeah, if you talk, you know, you grow a crop and turn it into biofuel, then yes, that you can make the fuel. But if you look at what it costs in the way of energy to clear the land, to plow it up, to plant the seeds, to harvest the seeds, to take them in a truck somewhere, to take them to a plant, to put them through, and you take the material cost of all the plant that you're sticking it into, the energy cost of it, then what you get out of it is, and I've got the numbers in front of me from different places around the world, the best is about 5. So for every unit of energy you put in, you get 5 back again. And the kind of consensus is that anything less than 4 is just not worthwhile. So, you know, because you're tying up a huge amount of land as well as all that machinery, you know, somebody called in and said, yeah, you know, you could power these big tractors with batteries, but you know, they have massive energy footprints as well and material footprints to make those batteries. So you realize from that this industrialized food, you know, plant production system has energy costs. And so you may as well have just burned the fossil fuels instead of going through this whole process because you get no more back than what you're stuck in the first place.
To be fair, we're talking about a situation where burning fossil fuels isn't an option, right? He was talking about a situation where we've run out of diesel and we can't import
it. So then how's he going to do all the stuff without the diesel? You know, that's the problem. It's a catch-22. You've got to have, you know, that the kind of scale of plant production requires massive amounts of fertilizer. I mean, if you take away all of that stuff, the only energy input is from the sun, then you're basically making it from solar energy. And there is definitely a gain there, but then you're going to lose all that gain by that whole process because then you've got to get the stuff to the vehicles that are going to use it as well. So at every step, there's energy loss.
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, do you accept this scenario is worth thinking about, that there may be a time when, whether it's a nuclear winter or some unexplained sort of supply chain interruption unexpected supply chain interruption like COVID, it might be useful to have more than a 21-day plan of how we're going to produce our food?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, I mean, this is not just, you know, some sort of emergency like that. We know that the energy return on investment of fossil fuels is declining fast. So we have to put more and more energy into getting the same amount of fossil fuel. So the fossil fuels are limited. Whether we decide to, you know, cut back on them for climate change reasons or not, they're already declining quite fast, and that will accelerate faster. So yes, we have to prepare ourselves for this. But the way to think about producing food that's sustainable, and not needing fossil fuels, so you don't have to kind of have that backup system, is to have local food grown, naturally grown, without all these fossil fuel inputs. We went from that to basically the opposite. We're now nitrogen fertilizer made from fossil fuels. Underpins a huge amount of the food production in this country, and that my work on freshwater, the impacts of that nitrogen fertilizer on our freshwaters and human health and drinking water and all that kind of thing are massive. So, when we think about sustainable futures, you've got to think about getting away from industrial food production, and so that's why, biofuels like that is not a sensible solution, and I suggested that, and we've shown this back in the 70s. One of the big research farms down in Southland called Invermay ran the whole farm on biogas, so taking the waste from the animals and from some of the plant material and putting it into a methane digester. So that happens on the farm, not at some central point. So you take out all of that energy input that you would have on a big, large-scale system. And they make biogas, and then you can easily convert these diesel machines over to gas. They'll instantly run on that stuff, and you can look at it at that scale as a much better kind of option. I think with all of these things, think local, think farm scale. As soon as we start getting into this huge, industrial scale, centralized stuff, that's when we start running into problems.
Very interesting, yeah. So you think part of what was missing in that conversation yesterday was an acknowledgement of the part that fossil fuels play in the fertilization of our farms?
Yeah, but every step of it, Jesse, like the harvesting and, the whole thing runs on fossil fuels at the moment. So, it's frustrating to me that when you speak to most New Zealanders, they'll say, oh, we're 80% renewable energy in this country, and not realising that the electricity is the 80%, but it's a small part of our energy input. It's actually 28% of our total energy use in this country is renewable. And then The really interesting part of that is that hasn't changed since 1990. You can look at a graph and it wiggles around a little bit between 27 and 29%, but it never gets above that. So as fast as we're adding all this renewable energy, all these solar panels and wind turbines, they're not displacing anything. They're just adding because our consumption has increased that much, that as fast as we add those things, we consume more energy, and so we don't get ahead.
As a whole, that's true, yes. I guess individuals and individual families would say, hey, well, as a family, we've really made a change to where we're getting our energy from and where we will in the future.
Yeah, but I think that, electricity, you can do that, but everything else pretty much.
But if you switch from petrol car to electric car, for example, that's a pretty significant change.
Yeah, but if you look at the materials that went into that, it's basically 10 times as much material goes into, creating one of these vehicles or creating, comparing. And I'm not saying don't go renewable. We just have to be aware that there is a massive material footprint, and copper is a great example of it, and it's becoming rarer and rarer, so we have to put more and more energy into getting this stuff. So electrifying needs copper. And that's just one example of the materials that we're getting into the really hard stuff. Just like the fossil fuels are getting harder and harder to get, so we have to put more and more energy in. So also to these materials. So there's no kind of copping out by just switching like that, because if you look around that same house, you'd find all the gadgets. I mean, in my lifetime, we have almost trebled per capita energy consumption in New Zealand. So we've got to kind of look back and see where we're going wrong with consumption.
I don't have the numbers to chat inputs into electric cars for you. One thing that I found interesting talking to a an electricity enthusiast, I might have chatted to you about before, is that we discount the amount of waste that we create when we use carbon, when we use, say, petrol-fueled cars. So every New Zealander at the moment, on average, creates, what, 6 tonnes or so of carbon per person. It's invisible, so we don't think about it, but using a bit of extra resource to save yourself putting 6 tonnes of this invisible stuff into the atmosphere is a calculation worth doing.
I'm not saying we should, you know, I'm not saying use fossil fuel cars instead. I'm saying we've got to get, it's not a choice of either or, it's neither. We can't have either because the material footprint and the roads we have to maintain and the car parks and the tires and all of that stuff has a huge environmental footprint, and it's the reality is that we're going to have to drastically reduce our consumption of energy, and that's just something that, you know, of course, no government wants to talk about, and it's very unpopular to be mentioning this stuff.
Yeah,
we want to keep doing what we're doing. It's just human nature.
Yeah, and that is your perspective, and it's a pretty compelling one. I just point out that there are other perspectives that we don't need to change our consumption. We just need to move to electric, and that will solve all of our problems.
Okay, so we'll go back to the car again. What about the greenhouse gas emissions of that car? They aren't loaded on our books. They're loaded on the country where they were made, and they have to be transported here. So if you think about that future where we don't have enough diesel, we also should be counting on a future where we don't have all of these imports coming in. You know, we got a hint of that during COVID time. It makes us dependent. I would say, you know, if a solution is some brand new thing that's constructed from tons of metal and plastic and all that kind of thing, doesn't matter what it runs on, that is a small part of the impact of your new thing, whatever it might be.
Hey, what's step one in a decentralisation or deindustrialisation of our food system, as you suggest?
Oh, it's definitely it's local and you know, getting those fossil fuels out of the fertilizer. The trouble is that we need to redefine what food is too, because you get into these discussions and you hear these numbers like we feed 40 million people, and it just doesn't you know, stand any scrutiny, because we include wine in that. You know, most of our food, you know, what's classed as food exports is milk powder. So milk tried with coal and sent off overseas, where it becomes a junk food constituent or infant formula. And, you know, I'd struggle to see that as food. I mean, in most cases, people would be better off without it. If we had a really good definition of what food was, and we could grow really good food, really healthy food, and easily feed New Zealand. We're really fortunate. We've got so much land and so few people that we could change our systems. And if you want to kind of think of the absolute goal, would be permaculture. And the opposite is what we have at the moment, which is this very industrialised, you know, fossil fuel dependent food production.
It's a real pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much, Mike.
Great. Thanks, Jesse.
Good to talk to you. Dr. Mike Joy is lecturer at the School of Geography, Environment and Earth Sciences, Te Herengawaka, Victoria University of Wellington, responding to our conversation yesterday about biofuels.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.